We're continuing our Radical King series, which started just before the millennium and is probably still going on to the next one. We're looking at Matthew's Gospel, written by one of the disciples. And before we get into that, I don't know about you, but have you noticed there are more and more warning signs wherever you go, even if they're not really that necessary? So if you use a public toilet, you get a sign saying, "Hot water, warning, water is hot." Here's some other warning signs that I've seen recently. If you can't see that sign, it says, "Get out of the sun if your skin tone matches this sign." Or this one with children playing on a pipe. The sign says, "Do not climb, play on or around pipe." Well, this is in a zoo. This is how our tigers see you. And there's a warning on this night owl, which is the tablets you take if you have trouble getting to sleep. It says, "Warning, may cause drowsiness." I don't know if you've ever stayed at a hotel and they give you sort of personalised napkins and serviettes. This one is from the Hilton Hotel and has a little sort of picture of where you are. But there's a warning on the serviette which says, "Caution, not to be used for navigation." And can anybody tell me what this sign is supposed to do? I think the bottom says, like, no eating and drinking, no dropping litter. And the bottom right one is probably no wallpapering. But I've no idea. No selfies, that's it. What's that top one? I've no idea that what that is.
Don't touch the
gate. And here's a letter opener from Staples with the warning, "Blades are extremely sharp. Safety goggles recommended." I've always been telling people working in a church office is extremely dangerous. And finally, one more, one of my favourites. It's for a wooden library ladder, only costing $99. Warning, not to be used as a ladder. There are all kinds of signs and warnings that we have around about us. Probably the most famous warning that everybody knows is this one. "Red sky at night, shepherd's delight. Red sky in morning, shepherd's warning." It actually comes from the Bible. So it's at least 2,000 years old and probably a bit longer. So let's see what it says in Matthew chapter 16 about this warning. "The Pharisees and Sadducees came to Jesus and tested him by asking him to show them a sign from heaven. He replied, 'When evening comes, you say, it will be fair weather, for the sky is red. And in the morning, today it will be stormy, for the sky is red and overcast. You know how to interpret the appearance of the sky, but you cannot interpret the signs of the times. A wicked and adulterous generation looks for a sign, but none will be given it except the sign of Jonah.' Jesus then left them and went away." So the first part of our reading today, Jesus reintroduces us to the Pharisees and the Sadducees, who were the religious teachers of the day. Now, this is all a bit odd recently because because he has been doing signs and wonders for numerous chapters. He's just fed the feeding of the 4,000. Just before that, he fed the feeding of the 5,000. He's been healing people, and the Pharisees and Sadducees say, "Show us a sign." So Jesus is sort of a bit ironic here. Supercilious irony, if you want to really be specific. So what he's saying is, yeah, it's great, isn't it? You can look up at the sky and you can do a weather forecast, but you can't see what's plainly in front of you. The promised Messiah, who like Jonah long ago was 3 days in the belly of a fish, it's me, Jesus. I'm predicting my death and resurrection, but you can't see it or you won't see it. And then he goes off. And the disciples, now if you were the disciples' wife or mother, you'd be saying, don't forget, when you fed the 5,000, remember, you didn't take enough lunch. This time, take enough lunch. And do you remember when the 4,000 were fed? You again, you forgot to take your lunch. Remember to take your lunch. What do? They forget to take anything. When they went across the lake, the disciples forgot to take bread. Be careful, Jesus said to them. Be on your guard against the yeast of the Pharisees and Sadducees. They discussed this among themselves and said, is it because we didn't bring any bread? Aware of their discussion, Jesus asked, you have little faith. Why are you talking among yourselves about having no bread? Do you still not understand? Don't you remember the 5 loaves for the 5,000 and how many basketfuls you gathered? Or the 7 loaves for the 4,000 and how many basketfuls you gathered? How is it that you don't understand that I was not talking to you about bread? But be on your guard against the yeast of the Pharisees and Sadducees. Then they understood that he was not telling them to guard against the yeast used in bread, but against the teachings of the Pharisees and Sadducees. So Matthew 16, verse 6 says, be on your guard against the yeast of the Pharisees and Sadducees. And the word in Greek literally means take notice. Don't be fooled. Be on your guard. So what is yeast? Well, fortunately, at Breakfast Church, we had an expert on yeast. You may be an expert in baking, so you probably already know this. But if you don't, yeast is a fungus. Unlike a mushroom, which is probably the most famous fungus, yeast is a one-celled fungi. And when you make bread, you get all the ingredients, and the yeast can harvest the energy without any oxygen, which is a process called fermentation. And it makes a couple of products. One is it produces enough energy, carbon dioxide, to make the bread rise. And obviously, if you make it in beer and wine, it produces alcohol. If you bake bread, when you bake your bread in an oven, most of the alcohol, anyway, evaporates, which it doesn't do, obviously, in alcoholic beverages. And here's a fascinating fact. In fact, if you want to find all these facts, there's a book which seemed to go down very well at Breakfast Church. Some people actually bought it. It's all about fungi. It's called Entangled Life by Merlin Sheldrake, which is all kinds of interesting facts about yeast and fungi. I can see some of you are interested, some of you are thinking, what? Here's one of the interesting facts from there. Since 2010, more than a quarter of Nobel Prizes for physiology or medicine have been awarded to work on yeast. So if you're getting that in a quiz, you're on it. And what's the difference between yeast and leaven? Because sometimes in the Bible it says leaven, or we say the word unleavened bread. Well, it's just a raising agent. So yeast is leaven, but there are other sort of raising agents that are not yeast, and they're all called leaven. So unleavened bread is when there is no rising agent. So why is this in the Bible? Well, in Exodus 12, we read about the escape from Egypt. And the Israelites had to escape very quickly. They needed some food, so they baked some bread. But if you've baked bread, it takes a long time. So what they did is they didn't put any yeast in it, so it was much quicker, and they had unleavened bread. And Jews still remember this during Passover festival to this day. They will eat unleavened bread. And that's because it says in Exodus chapter 12, celebrate the festival of unleavened bread, because it was on this very day that I brought you out of Egypt. Celebrate this day as a lasting ordinance for the generations to come. In the first month, you are to eat bread made without yeast from the evening of the 14th day until the evening of the 21st day. So unleavened bread had a real special place in the hearts and minds of Jewish people. But in the New Testament, the spiritual meaning regarding yeast nearly always represented evil and false teaching. So here's the point, which you're glad I've got round to eventually. Just as a little amount of yeast can affect a whole batch of dough, so a little amount of false teaching and spiritual deception can also affect the outcome of your life and indeed your eternal destiny. This is exactly why Jesus was so concerned about false teachers like the Pharisees and Sadducees. He compared their teachings to yeast because, like yeast, their false teaching had the power to spread. And false teaching has a terrible effect on our lives, which brings us to the question, what specifically was the false teaching of the Pharisees and Sadducees? They were the Jewish teachers of the day, and we often think of them believing the same, but I've produced this helpful chart, which gives you the differences between the Pharisees and Sadducees. So Pharisees, for example, held that not only were the laws in the Old Testament Bible to be followed, but the laws that they made up were also to be followed. Sadducees, on the other hand, thought you only had to obey the laws in the Old Testament Bible. They didn't do anything else, and that was it. The Pharisees and Sadducees had different views on the afterlife, resurrection of the dead, angels, and the importance of the temple. The way I used to remember it was a joke. It's not that funny, but anyway, we'll still go. What's the difference between the Pharisees and the Sadducees? The Pharisees believe in the resurrection of the dead, while the Sadducees don't. That's why they're sad, you see. Good. If you know a better joke about Sadducees, then please let me know. This is what Dr. Luke wrote about them in, 75 AD. The Sadducees say there is no resurrection and that there are neither angels nor spirits. So these are people that adhere to ancient ritual while actually denying the rituals that they have any meaning. So they believe that heaven and hell were made, well, what your life was now. That's all there was to worry about. There was nothing else coming. The Pharisees were different. They were more fundamentalists. So not only did they try to follow Old Testament law, they made up their own laws and elevated them to the same position as biblical laws. And they followed people around, a bit like a spiritual police force, to ensure people obeyed the law. But sometimes they didn't practice what they preached, which is why Jesus often called them hypocrites. But one thing they both agreed on is that you could earn God's favor. The Pharisees believed you could earn a place in God's kingdom. You could work your way into heaven. The Sadducees believed that the circumstances that you have in this world were a direct consequence of what people now and their family beforehand had earned in the sight of God. Now, this sort of false teaching is very common, but it's very dangerous. And it's a teaching that so many people believe. People believe that if you are good enough, you can earn your right into God's kingdom. However, it's completely the opposite. The Bible plainly tells us there is only one way into the kingdom of God, and that is through Jesus Christ. None of us are good enough for heaven. It doesn't matter how much hard work we do or how good we are, we're not going to make our way into a perfect heaven. Even the most perfect person that's ever lived will recognize that they have done things wrong, if they're honest. We all need to come to Jesus Christ and humbly confess and believe in him as our Savior and our God. So we mustn't buy into the false idea that we can make things right and earn our way into God's kingdom, because it's not going to happen. The problem is that false teaching nowadays is everywhere. It was a lot more difficult in Jesus' day. For example, they didn't have Facebook, but they tried to do the same thing. So you could say the Pharisees and Sadducees were like analog Facebook. They spread their message and they had to follow people around and people would follow them and they were liked. Now it's much easier to have false teaching. We have computer algorithms that decide what we should read online. And the more we look at one thing online, the more our device will feed us similar information. Unfortunately, I accidentally clicked on a Benny Hill clip. That was about 6 months ago. I've since been bombarded with Benny Hill clips and other comedies from the 70s and 80s because it obviously thinks I'm a big fan. And that's the way it works. You view some great teaching, you'll get some more of the same. However, if you see some false teaching, some bizarre conspiracy, some unsubstantiated news story, you'll also get more of the same. And it starts off as a small yeast, just a few thoughts, and it starts spreading throughout your whole body. And of course, Facebook does this on purpose. If you keep getting posts on your newsfeed that you agree with, you'll stay on the platform longer, and so you'll be advertised more. And seemingly intelligent people have been sucked into this. The world's most trusted media outlets are deemed rubbish. People seem more concerned to be a guy in his garage in Sacramento making stuff up, and that's more important. And we can easily say this morning, well, I won't be affected by all that fake teaching. It's so easy to spot. But I'm not sure that it is always, which is why Jesus says, be on your guard. But the question is, how do we spot it? Fortunately, we have this guy here, Thomas Brooks, 17th century English Puritan preacher and writer. He was loved by Spurgeon, and because he's from the 17th century, it's a bit of gravitas for the 11 o'clock service. So what does he say? And have these things stood the test of time? Well, let's have a look. There's seven of them, and the first one is, false teachers are people pleasers. Now, the Pharisees were experts in this. They managed to clarify biblical laws with their own interpretation, which is, in many cases, was the opposite of what the law tried to do. And they did this in order to gain a following. There's a whole chapter about this in Matthew, and it's chapter 23. Let's have a look at a little sample of it. You Pharisees and teachers of the law of Moses are in for trouble. You're nothing but show-offs. You travel over land and sea to win one follower. And when you have done so, you make that person twice as fit for hell as you are. Number two, false teachers throw dirt at God's people. False teachers are notable at dishing the dirt. For some reason, they want to discredit certain people and pour scorn on their ministry, most of whom are Jesus' most faithful ambassadors. St. Paul is widely regarded by Christians and non-Christians alike as one of the Christian giants. Here we read that his ministry was undermined and his reputation blasted by false teachers. They said his letters were very clever, but when you met Paul in person, he was unimpressive, a lightweight, and anything he said amounted to nothing. So if false teachers did it to St. Paul, they're going to do it to others. We sometimes say, if you throw enough mud around at people, no matter how good they are, some of it sticks. So false teachers like to condemn others rather than to build them up. Number three, false teachers are driven by their own heads and hearts. So let's have a bit of 17th century words from Thomas Brooks. You can say, tell this is the 17th century when you read what he says. Are there not multitudes in this nation whose visions are but golden delusions, lying vanities, brain-sick fantasies? These are Satan's great benefactors, and such as divine justice will hang up in hell as the greatest troublemakers if the physician of souls does not prevent it. Or, if you prefer, from Jeremiah. The Lord said to me, the prophets are prophesying lies in my name. I have not sent them or appointed them or spoken to them. They are prophesying to you false visions, divinations, idolatries, and delusions of their own mind. Number four, False teachers don't believe Jesus is the only way. All roads lead to God is a belief in today's society, and it's for the sake of being tolerant and understanding so we don't offend other people. It doesn't really matter what religion they choose, we'll all make it to the same eternal destiny. The problem with that is that not only does it contradict the Bible, it actually contradicts the very definition of what a religion actually is. This is what it says in John's Gospel. Jesus said to them, "I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." So Jesus made it perfectly clear. He is the way, the only way to a relationship with God. Number five, false teachers use clever language and appearance to disguise themselves. Let's have a bit of Thomas Brooks again. False teachers will put a great deal of paint and garnish upon their most dangerous principles and blasphemies, that they may better deceive and delude. They know sugared poison goes down sweetly. They wrap up their pernicious soul-killing pills in gold. He's got a good way with words, hasn't he, Thomas Brooks? I can see you're liking him already. And that's how cons and scams work. They seem plausible by the people making them. And if you meet people in person, they often seem charming. But what we read in 2 Corinthians is that some people are false teachers, deceitful workers, masquerading as prophets, as apostles of Christ. And no wonder, for Satan himself masquerades as an angel of light. It is not surprising then if his servants also masquerades as servants of righteousness. Their end will be what their actions deserve. And the penultimate one is false teachers use false arguments to win people to their opinions. And this is to do with fallacies. And I thought the sort of like the straw man fallacy, which is probably the most famous, was quite modern, but it goes back to the 15th century. And there are all kinds of fallacies that you hear of, and here's a few of them. So there's the bandwagon fallacy, where, you know, everybody jumps on the bandwagon, everybody believes it, so it must be true. Or there's the false dilemma fallacy. So the Pharisees, for example, could say, "Follow our teaching or you'll end up in hell. There is no other option." Or there's the burden of proof fallacy. "I'm right, you can't prove that I'm wrong, therefore I am right." That's the end of it. It says the bit of this in 2 Peter, where it says, "There were false prophets among the people, just as there will be false teachers among you. They will secretly introduce destructive heresies, even denying the sovereign Lord who bought them, bringing swift destruction on themselves. Many will follow their depraved conduct and will bring the way of truth into disrepute. In their greed, these teachers will exploit you with fabricated stories." And finally, false teachers gain from their followers. In Jeremiah 6, it says, "From false prophet to false priest, from the least false teachers to the most skillful false teacher, all are eager to profit from their followers and trade with dishonest hearts." So false teachers also teach that God wants them to be happy and wealthy. Some teachers even take it further to say that if you're not financially rich or emotionally and relationally prosperous, you're just not praying hard enough, or you need to increase your faith. This type of teaching is very dangerous and inaccurate, and the Bible clearly states otherwise. So let me conclude by just repeating those top seven ways to spot a false teacher by Thomas Brooks. False teachers are people pleasers. They throw dirt at God's people. They're driven by their own heads and hearts. They don't believe Jesus is the only way. They use clever language and appearance to disguise themselves. They use false arguments to win people to their opinions. and they gain from their followers. So let me conclude by reminding you of Jesus' words. Be on your guard. There are many false teachers, and they are like yeast. Their teaching starts small, but slowly and surely it affects your whole body, affecting the way you think, act, and ultimately how you will spend the rest of your life and eternity. I've got a couple of questions for you, which you can do this by yourself, or if you're around people and you want to get into a little discussion group, you're more than welcome to do so. Some questions for you then. You can choose to do one or all three. They are, if you don't believe in absolute right or wrong, what do you think about this sentence? Vladimir Putin isn't doing anything wrong. He just sees things from a different perspective. Or you can do this question. Have you been seduced by false teachers? If so, how did it affect you? Or this one, teachers are human and make mistakes. What's the difference between a teacher that makes mistakes and a false teacher? Please have a discussion amongst yourselves if you'd like to, or have a think about these questions by yourself.